is up, everyone, and welcome to the second episode of The Secret Life of the Serial Dreamer. My name is LT, and on this podcast, we talk about dreams. And today, specifically, we're going to be talking about the very first dreams that we had. The first things that we ever thought we wanted to do in life. So, we haven't talked about this before. I have literally no idea what's about to come out of any of these people's mouths. But before we do that, we have a first-time member on this podcast. Caleb, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, yeah, my name is Caleb, first time caller, long time listener. I'm the youngest one. I am number four. Let's see, things
so,
about me.
So Caleb, first, before you start, we kind of talked about this on the first podcast. What is your what is your current dream? Like, what is the thing you're currently pursuing, and how, like, where are you at in that kind of stage?
Ooh, wonderful question. Right now, right now I'm in college. I'm at a Bible school pursuing pastoral ministry. So my dream right now is to be a worship pastor. I really feel like that's it's kind of been burning in my heart ever since I was younger. First started playing the drums, and I just fell in love with music, and then as I got involved with church, I really fell in love with music and being a pastor. And so those two worlds kind of collide by being a worship pastor. So right now that's kind of where I'm headed. And it's been fun so far. Gotten to lead in some pretty cool places. And yeah.
Yeah. So do you think you're at the point of kind of like just on the cusp of realizing the dream? Like there's only like a few things more that need to go right for you to kind of achieve that dream, right? I mean, you're in college, so
right,
you know,
yeah.
You're right at your
making those steps. Hallelujah. I think so. I think that right now, in terms of vocation, it's a little difficult because I'm in school, so I can't make that step until I'm done. And I'm really committed to finishing up my degree. So I think that will be the next step, and that's going to happen here in the next couple years. So I'm super pumped about that.
Sweet.
But I think so, yeah. I've gotten some lots of opportunities, been asked a few different times to lead worship. So my in the area that I'm in with the community, the group that I'm kind of in here at my school, those steps are really, they're not far off. They're not yet, but they're not far off, I wouldn't say.
Awesome. Well, welcome to the podcast. We're glad you can make it. One of these days we're going
to
get everybody on at the same time, but
although
that could be a little chaotic. So, like I said, today we're going to be talking about like the very first dream. So your very first dream that you had, you know, what kind of inspired you to pursue that? Where do you think it came from? And then, how did it end? Because at this point, I think we're all on to our second or third dreams by this time. So, why don't you start? What was your very first dream?
I'm going to go ahead and do a dream from my childhood because
I have a pretty vivid memory.
Yes. As first a child. My very first dream that I remember was that I wanted to be nine.
You wanted to be nine?
I accomplished that.
Wow.
It's been 40 years ago and I'm building off that success. The reason I wanted to be nine was my older brother was nine. And it just seemed like everything was going his direction.
he was doing all right.
He got to call most of the shots. He knew more interesting people than I knew. He did more interesting things than I could do. Nine was the thing. Apparently after that, though, he was in double digits, which waiting to be nine, I didn't expect that was coming. But nine.
Do you think this life would end at nine? Like after nine, you're just like, all right, this is all.
I thought nine was the pinnacle because I saw older people and I thought, I don't know if I want to go there. I felt like nine, you could do it all. You could have it all. You could be it all. So that was what I wanted.
Double digits was just like a fantasy. It's way out there.
I didn't know anyone who was in double digits. I'd never heard of the word double digit until my 9-year-old brother became double digits, and then he quickly told me that that's what was the thing now.
Do you think that's a failure of homeschool, or are you just like weren't paying attention?
I was not in homeschool yet at that point. No, it was just a regular school kid wanting to be nine.
Wanting to be nine. I don't know.
Wow.
I think nine was great because like $10 meant significantly more at 9 years old than it does currently.
Well, it's more than your
age. Literally cannot do anything with $10. Like, literally nothing. Name something. Can't do it. Walk down the street. Nope. Can't afford it. Taxes. Taxes are way more than $9.
Have you ever, one of the worst things about moving to a state that has state tax is you can't buy a 99-cent Arizona iced tea anymore.
For 99 cents.
It's like a buck seven.
How good is your, what is your guys? What is, I'm speaking of being nine, you want to know?
We're walking with 7 cents. My monsters.
You remember? I distinctly remember an experience as a 9 year old when we went to South Dakota on that mission trip, and it was the same thing. You couldn't buy like bubble gum. Like a 10 cent piece of bubble gum was like 12 cents. So I was like, "Yeah, I got a dime. Let's go." And then I walk in there, and they're like, "It's 12 cents." I was like, "No, it's not. It says 10 cents. I don't, what country are you living in where 10 cents doesn't mean 10 cents? They're like South Dakota where there's sales tax.
Yep.
And then someone told me before we left that like if you buy something but you show your ID, like that you're from Oregon, then they'll like, you don't have to pay sales tax, which is not even true. But I was like, they're like, it's 12 cents. And I was like, no, it's 10. They're like, sales tax. I was like, yeah, but I'm from Oregon. So I don't have to pay that. They didn't agree. So I had to go ask someone for two pennies.
That's awesome.
But
I got the bubble gum.
You walk in and you're like, I have a dime in diplomatic immunity. Give me my 2 cents back.
I have Oregonian immunity. I need my 10 cents or my two cents back.
I need my 2 cents back.
Dad, what was your childhood dream? I think I should just name this episode "Childhood Dreams." That's probably what I'm.
There you go.
Wow.
My first dream was to be a ventriloquist.
Really?
Oh. Wow.
Wow.
To be what? What did you want to be?
I don't even know if I could say the word.
A ventriloquist. No, that just makes it so much more interesting. Why?
I think
like...
it was kind of cute how you said it.
Did you see my lips move?
I did not.
I didn't. Although I wasn't looking, I could run back the tape, but I don't think so. I think they were pretty still.
Oh, for some reason I saw a show, and that old ventriloquist doll, Charlie. I think it was Charlie. Anyway.
I'm not up to date on my ventriloquism.
Yeah, sorry. Anyway, I saw somebody do it, and they actually, I think it was when we were at Silver Dollar City one time. There was somebody that did that, and they did a live show, and I was captured by that. I just thought that was the coolest thing to get up there and grab the attention of the people and make them laugh. And so, yeah, that was my first thing, and I couldn't do it hardly at all. Well, you know how I am. I do my puppet voices. So it's a dream that didn't happen. No. But that was my first one.
Maybe you think that's what got you? You think that's what originally like attracted you to children's ministry was this initial like desire? Like, oh, hey, they do puppets. I could just do that forever. And that would be fine.
Yes. Yes. That was the hidden motivation behind all the skits and stuff that we did in children's ministry and for the school that we were in. Yes.
For the past 40 years of children's ministry, no. You've just been hoping someone's like, hey, Elton, do you know how to do ventriloquism? And you're like, yes! Finally! Someone has asked me.
It's been welling up in his heart.
Nobody's ever asked me.
40 years.
What's mom always say? This is something nobody will ever ask me to do.
What is something someone will never ask me to do? Which is unfortunate because it was your dream. You've been pursuing it. And you just accidentally recruit talented people who are also good at it, and they're just like, oh, I'll just do it instead.
I'm wounded.
Caleb.
So are we, Dad. So
Caleb.
Are we.
At least
we don't need to go over puppeteering stories. That's just going to bring up
podcast.
Caleb, what was your first dream?
What
was a childhood dream of yours?
Goodness. I think one of my first childhood dreams, if you can believe this, was to be an engineer.
A I don't believe so, that. Continue.
Yeah, so it's either that or a door-to-door salesman, because I did a whole lot of that growing up.
I don't think that's a dream. I think you're confusing chores and dreams.
Purgatory. No, okay.
Purgatory.
No, here's why I thought I wanted to be a door-to-door salesman. Me and my best friend growing up, his name was Jaren. We used to sit out on the porch every day after school and think of things that we could sell to our neighbor across the street. The knots. We're like, what can we sell?
Yeah. Well, they bought everything.
They bought everything.
They did buy everything.
We used to sit on the porch and think, well, this one time Jared came out and he's like, dude, I can bend a spoon. And I was like, dude, we can sell that.
So, sell the idea or just sell a bent spoon?
Sell a bent spoon.
How ridiculous is that?
We'd walk over to Mike Knott's house and we'd knock on the door and he'd be like, how's it going, guys? And he'd be like, great. We got a bent spoon. You want to buy it? It's 25 cents. And he'd give us a dollar. And we're like, oh my gosh, we made so much money. So yeah. Oh man, I did that a lot. I think that my first dream was to be, it was never to be a rock star, but I always wanted to be a studio musician.
Oh yeah.
I always wanted to be in the pit. So, like, you know, like orchestras, you want to be the musician there, because they always, like, it blows my mind even now that you can hire somebody who's never played anything, who's never played the piece you're about to give them, and be like, play this, and then they play it perfectly.
Yeah.
And man, that was just the coolest thing. And so I always wanted to be able to do that. And got myself on a record. I am on.
You are on a record.
I am on a record.
And it's sold.
And it's sold, yeah.
and not just to, like, you and mom and dad. Like legitimate
Mike
people.
Oh, man.
Mike Knott didn't even have to be the only
No, it wasn't even Mike Knott.
Mike wasn't even there. Oh, man. What is it? It's the Virtue, Kids of Virtueville
album.
CD. Our listeners out there, if you'd like to purchase Kale McMillan's debut album.
Which you're just drummer on that one, right?
I was just drumming on that one, yeah.
That was cool. That was an intense experience too. Mom was telling me that was like a pretty big learning experience, having to like learn the difference between like playing on a stage where you can kind of mess up versus playing in a studio where every note has to be perfect.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's a huge curve. And to the point where even in school, my first major was audio engineering. In school, there was a difference between live production and studio production. And there are two completely different tracks, because when you're mixing and playing live, you have the freedom to make those mistakes, because they can get muddled up in the sound. But in the studio, it has to be perfect.
Yeah.
And so, it was a really neat, really cool experience. Got to play with, what was his name?
Javon.
Yeah. So I'd be sitting there and he'd be like, play this song. Okay, play it harder, play it softer, play it faster, whatever it was. It was really cool. So he's like, add some more flair to it. And I'm like, I don't even know what that means. He'd be like, you play it like this. And then he'd play the song.
Add flair.
And then Sebring would be like, I think that sounds pretty good. And he'd be like, yeah, I think I'm just going to play this song. And I'd be like, you do what you want.
You're brought in and then kind of forced out.
I'm on a few of them. I still made it. We made a stomp track. Mom's in the stomp track.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am. I messed up
the stomp experience.
Track. You messed up the stomping.
I did. Apparently there's a way to stomp.
Half of our family is very musically inclined and the rest of us are not as much.
It's true.
We can fake it well enough. Mom,
raise your hand if you're not musically inclined.
Well, it's a podcast, so no one's gonna see our hands raised, so they'll just have
to
guess.
But isn't that so nice?
Guess who?
All right, Mom, next childhood dream.
I wanted to.
What's yours, LT?
My childhood dream?
What is your childhood dream?
I don't know. I think, I mean, mine definitely all involves sports. I wanted to be like a professional athlete. Like, I wanted to be like that good. Actually, I think my dream was just to have my name called in an arena. Like, I think that's what I wanted. Like, it didn't matter, like, how it happened. It could have been basketball or hockey or one of those two, probably. Although I've never like actually played real hockey in my whole life, but I felt like I could have been really good at it.
There you go. You loved your rollerblades.
I did. But I think I probably
I think you just watched D2 the Mighty Ducks.
Yeah. I think my actual dream growing up was I wanted to play point guard for the Oregon Ducks. Like I wanted to be on the Oregon Ducks basketball team. Like more than anything else, like that was that was all I thought about. I shot free throws in the snow because that was like, you shoot free throws in the snow, like it'll just be better. And I was like, yeah, makes sense. So I went and shot free throws in the snow. Didn't make it better. I just froze.
You also used to mark the court with Sharpie for how many free throws you'd make.
I did. I did that. Yeah. No, that's true. They're still there. At the old Harris Private School gym, I had a bunch of tally marks of how many times I made 10 free throws in a row. And but I mean, it did pay off a little bit because I would go play basketball all the time out in on the driveway, and that's where Terry saw me. He's like, "Hey, you should like try out for the basketball team." I don't think if he wouldn't have come and said, "Hey, you should like come play for the high school team," I don't think I might have, but I don't think I would have felt as comfortable like showing up, not like literally not knowing anybody, not knowing the coach, not knowing what was going on. But I think because he saw me, he was like, "Yeah, you know, you could play." I'd be like, "All right, sure, yeah, I'll come play." So, you know, I think that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that dream growing up. That ended when I looked in the mirror and realized I was short, unathletic. It's not gonna happen.
You going to state with basketball was a dream for Dad too, because just sitting there in that old 50s gym and watching all the teams come in, just so much fun. Awesome.
Yeah,
I mean it was Hoosiers was for Dad.
I do think my dream definitely like changed, like around eighth grade in terms of basketball. I realized like I just want to be a good high school player. Like, if my basketball career ends at high school, that's fine. But, like, I want to go somewhere with it. I just don't want to, like, you know, only play, like, local teams. Like, I want to, like, make it to state and make it, like, win a couple games in the state tournament. Like, that was my goal, which we accomplished. We were great. We were fine. We had good defense. We just didn't let anybody else have the ball. So, I am so surprised people sat through that. It's some of the worst basketball. Like, literally.
It was long.
The
strategy worked, but it was just so
boring. It was rough to watch.
We knew if you were up by 4 points at halftime, you were going to win.
Yeah, because we would just hold the ball first. Like, the games were 30, like, four 8-minute quarters. And so the games literally lasted, like, 33 minutes. There was, you know, nobody shot free throws. The games ended up 25-28, and we were blowing them out. We blew people out by 3 points. Like, you would not believe. They had no chance. That's what I remember about basketball.
Mom and I hung out in the bathroom sometimes because we were so afraid the coach was going to yell at our kid just a little bit more than we could handle.
Just a little bit more.
I went in the bathroom, just said, get away from it. And I found another mom in there and I'm like, what are you doing in here? And she's like, I just can't handle it when my kid gets in trouble all the time.
Oh.
I said, I know, I can't handle it either.
Got the double foot stomp. I was on the receiving end a couple of those. That was fun. Okay, mom. I guess that was childhood. So let's move on to like middle school, high school-ish dream. Like, well, like when did what okay. changed? What like, what was your passion around that time?
Wow. I've actually always really loved to teach, and I don't know who else is like this, but whenever I learn to do something new, all I can do when I'm doing that thing is think about how I could teach somebody else to do it. Like, I rehearse it over and over in my head. Like, if I'm making a bed, if I'm weeding the yard, doesn't matter what I'm doing. If I'm learning how to drive, it didn't matter. Once I learned how to do it, I had to do it more than once, the whole rest of the time I would be rehearsing in my head. Well, this is step one, this is step two, and this is what you need to avoid and what you need to try. And I don't know, teaching has just been a huge motivator for me. And so I think that when I was in high school or middle school, you know, I just love that. I loved befriending people who maybe were struggling with making friends or just helping people out that maybe didn't know how to fit in or what to do next. And so it's just kind of like relationally, I was really motivated to make things easier for people and
like see the light
make sure people felt welcome. Yeah. And make sure like people felt welcome. People felt a part. People felt like they could succeed because I was like right there coaching them and right there helping them. So mm-hmm. I think that's always been a huge thing. And I think that really started in junior high for me.
Yeah. I think a lot of our family kind of has that same passion, the whole, and I think it comes from you definitely. We all like to teach, mm-hmm. or maybe we just all like to be the smartest person in the room. One's
I
like,
guess that's not it.
It's two sides of the same coin. I mean, one is very egotistical and one's like very servant minded. depends on how arrogant you are, I guess, in giving your lesson.
Yeah, I suppose so. Most of the time I wasn't even talking to a real person. I'm like giving the lesson to an imaginary person just to keep myself interested in the task.
Oh, I feel the same way. Yeah. Sometimes it's hard, the monotonous things. I think that's a good one. No, but that definitely makes sense that like we, like the rest of the family, we are kind of the way we are and why you and dad get along so well is we're all kind of the same, like teaching, like we're learning things because we like to teach other people. And we just like to have just general knowledge because you never know when it's going
to be necessary. I like to re-explain, even if I don't get to re-explain it to another person, I'm re-explaining it and re-explaining it until I get it explained perfectly.
Yeah.
And Avery was telling me one time that that's how he learns math. Like he's in engineering school, but he learns math by listening to the teacher and then re-explaining it to himself as if he's the one teaching it. Because the best way to learn, really, for me at least, is to teach it. So mm-hmm. I can teach it to myself. And, you know, you would think by now I would really be a great cook and I'd be great at laundry and I'd be great at all those monotonous things because I've definitely taught myself how to do it a few times.
Yeah, but you're the teacher and the student. So once you've taught it, you just expect the student to remember and then you just go
you
on.
You really
to the next.
Do.
But you're both.
Yeah,
so
then you
both,
move on.
Both sides are letting each other down. Teacher's like, let's move on to the next student subject. And the student's like, wait, hold on.
The teacher's like, I've already forgotten. I don't know what you're doing.
I taught you. You should remember. I don't know why we gotta. Dad, what was your like high school memory? What was your high school dream? What did you shift to?
Junior high school dream was definitely be to play college basketball for sure.
Yeah, you want to play for the Jayhawks?
Everything. I played all the time. I loved it. Yeah, it was all in basketball.
What do you think that taught you? Like, or like, when did you realize that like you weren't gonna play basketball, like in college? Like what was that moment like, and like, how did you like? Well, no, because I've been there, and there's a lot of people that like. I think a lot of people that are listening to this are like, they have a big dream, and at some point they're gonna get to a point where there's like, it's literally just not gonna happen. There's just no, there's no physical like. For me, I wanted to play for the Oregon Ducks. I think it was between my, I went to that basketball camp. Between junior and senior year of high school, and junior year, I was like, if I just have a really good senior year, I could go to JUCO, then I could make it. And during there was this one kid that was like legit recruited to go play at some D1 schools, and he's like, yeah, people have been talking to me since I was like eighth grade, and I played against him, and he just destroyed me. I had no chance, and I was like, it's just not gonna happen. I can't jump high enough. I can't shoot well enough. I'm smart, but I'm not that smart. You know,
but you're still wearing the t-shirt.
Yeah, I'm still committed. It could still
There's still hope.
I go to open gym every day hoping there's going to be a scout there. Be like, you finished college? I'm like, I got 3 more years of eligibility, just in case you're wondering. Never happens. Anyway, sorry. Dad, like, what was that moment like? Do you remember that?
Yeah, no, my youth pastor at the time was a great basketball player. He's about 6'5", and he was incredible. And when we would play basketball, he would never try to beat us until we started getting cocky. Mm. And then he would score a few on us and let us know that we weren't all that. And so he was a great guy. And so he basically said to me, we had a conversation because I really wanted to play for Oral Roberts University, where College called Friends University that was close to my house. Just thought it'd be fun. And he basically told me that it wasn't possible because I couldn't shoot with my left hand. And he said, if I don't learn to shoot with your left hand as good as your right hand and you're not practicing, then you're not going to make it. So I went to basketball camp that summer, and at that basketball camp, this one of the coaches there said, every moment that you don't practice, somebody else is, and they're getting better than you. Mm-hmm. And so I came back from that summer and played and kind of really wanted to be the best I could be at that. And I just realized that I had to have, for me, a come to Jesus moment and realize that I had a passion to be a youth pastor and that I wanted to do that more than I wanted to be play college basketball.
Right.
So I said, fine. I just said, no, I'm not going to, if I can recreationally play basketball, I'll do that. But I'm going to put my emphasis on serving the Lord and what he wants for me. And that's caused incredible dreams and incredible fruit from that. So anyway, that's what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's definitely a hard moment for a lot of people to have. Like, yeah, it's just not going to happen. You know what I mean? Which is just,
I think that you have to come to a place where God created you a certain way. You have skills and abilities and just embrace that identity. Identity is something that everybody struggles with, everybody.
Yeah.
And once you grab a hold of you, God created you this way, then you start getting them into that rhythm of life. I mean, I could have tried to pursue basketball. It wouldn't have happened. I just wasn't that good enough.
Yeah.
I pursued believing in kids and serving kids in youth ministry. And man, it has sent me, honestly, it's sent me around the world. It's sent me to places and I've connected with people because of that in incredible ways. That dream of bringing children to Jesus has taken us incredible places. Even as a family, it's taken us places. So, and that's okay. You know,
what do you think?
You can't compare.
No. What do you think the best way to find your identity is? Cause I've always wondered that, like if you have a dream or your dream is coming to an end, you're realizing like, I don't know, like this has been my whole life. So long. Like this isn't happening. And you just know, like, I've got to find something else. Like, how do you find that identity? Do you just go back to the root of who you think you are as a person or what do you think you do?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think number one, I wouldn't live with the pressure I lived with when I was your age that I had to figure it out.
Yeah.
I would enjoy what brought me happiness at the moment. Hmm. So let's say you're watching a movie and like, you know, one of our favorite family movies, obviously is The Pistol Pete, right?
I'm sure that's going to be mentioned a lot on this podcast.
Right? And there's you know, in Glory Road, obviously that's another one, right?
Yeah.
So when you watch those shows, which of those characters gets you emotional? Mm-hmm. Is it watching the coach? Is it watching the parent of the basketball player? Is it watching the basketball player who made the last shot? There are multiple people that are in that scene.
Yeah.
What brings you emotion at that moment? And I would say that's your sweet spot. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's the coach.
Yeah.
That's why the tickets that we had for the Oregon Duck basketball games were up high.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to watch the coach and how he responded. I wanted to see how he was thinking.
You want to see the whole floor. So, you're not trying to look at the star player from up close.
So all of a sudden he makes an adjustment in the game that puts a kid in a place to succeed. Everybody's cheering. 90% of people are all cheering for the player who made the three-pointer.
Right.
I'm excited about three or four moves before that where the coach called XYZ plays to put the team eventually into a place to win.
Yeah.
And so, and I think that, so for my life, I've just kind of like, well, what's something that I can do moving forward that puts me in the place to do that? And then obviously as a follower of Jesus, the more that I realize that where it says it's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives inside of me, all of a sudden my identity doesn't get wrapped up on my outward success.
Yeah.
Because that's where we all lose. If it's all about outward success, what we know as a family, you know, at any moment, something tragic could happen. Something difficult could happen, and all of a sudden what was on the outside seems to go away, but it's really what's inside of you. And so as you pursue that, you come to a place where you just say, you know what, God created me with this love for whatever it might be, and here's what's really important. And he created somebody else with something else. Mm-hmm. And I think identity, the moment that you begin to appreciate how other people are created, it begins to allow you to appreciate how you are identified yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
Because if you start comparing, you're going to go to bed jacked up every night.
Every time, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I really like the idea of like taking a look at the things that like your favorite things, like your favorite movies, your favorite mm-hmm. books. You know, what is it like? Who in those stories? Because life's all about stories, and we're constantly being told stories, or telling stories, or reacting to stories. Like what story like gets you the most emotionally involved? Like, and yeah. It doesn't have to be sports movies. I mean, we love sports, so right. That's why we make the analogy. I totally agree with you. I think that the more that I think about it, I way more like as cool as much as we love that I love Pistol Pete. I react way more to all the things that that the coach says. Like, I want to be the guy that's saying that to the kid way more so than I want to be mm-hmm. the kid that's like being told that too. You know, I want to be that one that inspires. You know what I mean? Same thing mm-hmm. with like if we're talking about we talked about Miracle, the Miracle on Ice hockey movie, right? It's the same thing.
Right.
I don't want to be the person that's running out of laps. I want to be the one that says like I want to, you know, say the thing that inspires them and brings them together as a team. You know what I mean? It's right. Like that's the character they identify with. Whereas if you're watching a movie like mm-hmm. August Rush, like you could identify with the actual character. Like I love how he sees music, and I see music that way. You know what I mean? I hear like I could never do that. Like no chance. You know what I mean? But the way that he like understands music, like I want to be in that like flow all the, like if I could live my life in that flow, that's where I would live. Some people, that's how they identify. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or if you're talking about a movie like Batman, even an action movie, if your favorite character is the tech guy behind the scenes, right? Yeah. He's the one that's planning. He's the one that's figuring things out. Like if that's who you mm-hmm. identify with, and that's, you know, find the root of that person's character and say, this is why mm-hmm. I want to be that person. So let's pursue something in that field. Mm-hmm. If it works out, it works
who
out.
Who am I in the story?
I don't know. Who do you want to be, Mom? I don't. Yeah. Whoever you want to be, because Mom, I think
whoever you want to be.
Yeah.
I love movies where my favorite movies growing up were all movies where there was an absolutely impossible situation, and the hero of the movie to me is the person who solved all the problems.
Mm-hmm.
So I like movies where people are shipwrecked. I like movies mm-hmm. where. You know, or even home improvement shows, I like it because somebody starts off with an absolute disaster. And I know that they've got a budget and they've got a time frame, but within those constraints, what are they able to do to fix this problem and to mm-hmm. solve it? So I'm a problem solver. I like solving large problems, but I like solving those little tiny problems every day that gets me up in the morning, that makes me feel alive and purposeful.
Yeah, because your reaction is not like like when you're watching it, you're seeing like you get. It's interesting. There's a thing in psychology how when you're watching something, there's these things called mirror neurons where basically whatever that character is experiencing, you can experience the same thing. It's like people watch unboxing mm-hmm. videos. It's the exact same reason, right? You get that same endorphin rush if you identify with that person and you identify with their struggle. Then when they solve that struggle, you get that rush of endorphins mm-hmm. just like they're getting. So in your case, like. When you see somebody solve the problems, you are like, that was great. That was an awesome solution. You know what I mean? You get that endorphin rush. So find that mm-hmm. thing that you can kind of, your thing in your case is fixing problems. You know what I mean? And it happens to be home improvement because you love that. You love building your little swing things that are awesome. You know what I mean? It's that you find mm-hmm. that, you find something that you can identify as a rush of emotions and you just pursue mm-hmm. that because it's fun. And like I think the big theme throughout this whole podcast is it's not something that has to make you $1 million. It's just something that has to make life fun for the current 24-hour day that you're living in. You know what I mean? And it could change a little bit tomorrow.
That's exactly right.
And that's, you know, it is what it is. But yeah.
I think too that what happens is when we see somebody who's very confident in who they are, we try to mimic how they got there.
Yeah, that's good. Hmm.
Right. And so we don't need to do that. And don't be afraid if something happens like that made me feel I got emotional with what just happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay mm-hmm. to feel that. And so to go with that and to embrace that. right? Mom said that the problem solving thing. We talked about the coaching thing. And it could be, you know, the choreographer is actually playing in front of that big symphony, like that, you know, that little boy eventually got to play in the symphony, right? Mm-hmm. Where was mom? He saw his mom and dad in the symphony, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And so maybe that's what you like. And I think that don't be afraid to feel that. And number one, just acknowledge it. And then, like we talked about last week, once you acknowledge it, maybe share that with somebody that you really value and trust and say, man, I just really enjoy whatever it is. And don't be afraid of that. And that's why comparison is such, it is a hindrance to us really accepting our identity.
Yeah. Because I definitely think it changes because one good example, if we're going back to the sports thing, like I love golf right now, but when I watch golfing movies, I significantly more identify with the actual golfer than I do with like their teacher. And that's because currently I think I could be the world's best golfer. Like that's still a dream. You know what I mean? And so like I watch it, I'd be like, okay, they worked hard. They put in the practice. Like I can do that. I can be that person. As opposed to in 10 years from now when I'm like, this is never going to happen. But I could be the guy that coaches the guy that puts in the work. You know what I mean? It's just it's kind of a cycle that continues.
I would encourage you to, LT, that what the thing that you like to do is you like to find something and go all in.
Yeah, I try to master something as quickly as I can.
So rather than just putting a cap that it's always going to be golf, and if at some point you change your mind and it's horseback riding because you live up in the mountains now, right? That you don't get discouraged or you don't let people discourage you, that all of a sudden you took that dream to master something and you changed it.
Yeah.
I think that's where your inner peace comes from, the ability to master something.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so that's your sweet spot. So, and what happens is, you get people in your life because it's so much easier just to identify something rather than have the tension of the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
So don't let people put a, well, you can only master golf where it could be cooking and it could be being the world's greatest dad. It could be coaching, you know, what there's so many different things that you could do. So I just want to, I think with us people that are listening, once you find that, There's a core to that dream.
Yeah.
And find that core and allow that core to be manifest in different areas and seasons of your life is when you're going to find great hope and identity.
Yeah, which again, I definitely think is the identity part of this because I think dreams are all built off a common identity. Like you, there's who you are as a person and then your dreams are manifestations of you as like who your core is and how you respond to the world, right? So whether it's like mom, I think mom's core is a teacher. So everything that she's done has been based off this core of wanting to teach, right? She went into children's ministry to be a teacher. She started a curriculum company because it teaches people.
You know? Yeah.
She's a problem solver because by their nature, people who teach are problem solvers, right? They find and identify problems that are in the world or in a person and they fix them. They teach someone how, and not just fix them for the immediate, but teach them like, this is how you solve this going forward and you can always have this.
You can solve this yourself.
Yeah. So even if it's a problem within yourself or like a solution that comes up, like you like homemaking because there's this problem and you're kind of teaching yourself throughout all the processes of how you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think that I agree. I definitely think the watching movies and understanding who you identify with in the characters is a great way to kind of find out who you are as a person. I don't think it's the only way, you know, and I definitely think you should like listen to other people. And I think you should, you know, you can't just watch one source and be that your only influence. But to kind of take stock of what you do when you're not thinking about what you're doing, like what do you listen to when you're just not thinking about what you're listening to? What websites do you visit? What when you're by yourself and can do anything you want, what consumes your free time? Like that'll tell you a lot about who you are and kind of what you want to do. You know what I mean?
You're listening to this, does this strike a chord with you? Like, are there things that you've done, movies you've watched, books you've read, things you've listened to that you constantly go back to and think, that really helps me identify who I want to be and what I want to do?
Yeah, definitely. I think that in the season I'm in, or just the time, the age, what have you, I'm mostly consumed by what I would consider simplicity. And there's a super good book that I read last semester. Where is it? It's called Ministry in the Image of God. And it's about how the Trinity doesn't seem to make sense, but it's still the core of why we do what we do as ministers, is whatever, as people that profess the faith, why it's the central, the core of what we believe. And one of the chapters is entitled Complex Simplicity. And the idea of it is that there's a simple thought, and then the further you dive into that simple thought, say 2 + 2 = 4, right? The further you dive into that thought, the more complex the reasoning becomes. And what happens is you get to the complexity, and at that point, lots of people stop, because that's where the most of the words come in, the most of the whatever, the equations, the complexity. We are drawn as people to understand the complexity. But the book suggests that in almost a philosophical, I would consider more spiritual sense, there's a simplicity on the far side of complexity, not just on the near side. So you can think of it as a parabolic curve. It goes up and then it comes back down. So it starts out as simple, and then it's really complex. And then the further you go, the deeper you go, the more simple it becomes. Mm-hmm. And as Christians, we get the wonderful foresight, foreknowledge, knowing that simplicity is God, is Christ. That's the simplicity. Now, he's very complex, but at the same time, he's not more complex than we think he is. He's simple, and he built us. He built life on these simple concepts. And so, what drives me right now is finding those fundamental simplicities or fundamental truths. And so, the books that draw me in, kind of the stories, the ideas, I think the one that I will always find myself coming back to, because I listen to lots of podcasts too. There's three people that really kind of just blow my mind, that I always like, oh, I'm just going to re-listen to these podcasts, or I'm just going to go rewatch this show or reread this book. And so the show is Sherlock, because because why not? Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's, even the movies, they're so good, because what you see in the character of my favorite character is Martin Freeman's Watson, because Sherlock forgets that things need to be simple, but Watson never does. He always knows that it needs to come back to the core of someone, and that rings really true with me, in that he's not the high-functioning sociopath, but you can see that he's tracking with Sherlock the whole time. Mm-hmm. It's just he never loses sight of, yeah, but there's a soul standing in front of me, and I need to consider that. Where Sherlock's like, sure, they die, I don't care.
He can understand the genius, but explain it simply.
Exactly.
Basically, and yeah. So, I think there's a great teaching philosophy that says if you can't explain something to a 5-year old, you don't truly understand it.
Yeah.
So
exactly,
it's basically the same thing. Like, you can be the smartest person in the world, but if you can't break something down to where it's so simple that just a normal human being could get it enough, if you have to use big words to explain something, then you don't know it enough to be teaching it at that point.
Yeah,
and I think that makes a ton of sense, that you're trying to find like your drive is you're trying to find the complexities, but also be able to see the simplicity in them and bring people on both sides kind of together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so this book that I've been kind of trying to dive in, or this writer. His name is Malcolm Gladwell. He wrote a book called David and Goliath. And the premise of the book is that the fundamental truth of the story of David and Goliath is that David was never the underdog.
I've heard this theory before.
And, considering that the scientific research, the ideas that Goliath was actually more of a facade than an actual warrior, like in the words that he says and the way that he can't carry his own shield.
He wasn't strong enough to carry his own shield. He was blind. So, he had to be led out onto the battlefield It was fear that was standing in front of David. It wasn't Goliath.
It wasn't, and that's so neat because even, and one of my favorite things is that when I first heard that theory, I was so concerned. I was like, whoa, that's ridiculous. Like, but then the more I thought about it, it makes so much sense because it points back to the character of God, which is that he was in control the whole time and never once was David the underdog. He might have seemed as such, but he never was. And so I just think that's so cool. And Malcolm Gladwell has a very, very, the way that he tracks is almost in the same way that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle would write. And then C.S. Lewis, if you know, you're not a Christian if you don't read C.S. Lewis.
What?
That's what my professor says. That's what
I think. Says.
I think.
In my opinion.
But he.
I haven't read it.
I haven't either.
But in C.S. Lewis's book *Mere Christianity*, that's the whole premise of the book.
That you're not a Christian unless you read his book. I don't think that's
precisely.
A good premise.
Yeah. But he breaks down all these concepts, very hard theological, philosophical concepts that these theologians over the centuries really have developed and created to explain certain things that we don't understand. And his whole thing was that I'm just like you, and here's how it makes sense to me. And it's very beautiful in that he has a mind behind him, but he never loses track of his audience. And he never loses track that the person sitting across from him is not a board so that for him to regurgitate information at. The thing in front of him is another living person. And I think that really rings true with me in that, in my studies, in my practicing, in my strive to find those fundamental truths, I think it's also at the heart of our faith is that we never lose track that we're not seeking the information for information's sake. We're seeking the information for the person's sake, the person that's sitting in front of us. And so, I think that's a huge drive for me. And so taking lots of personality tests, and I'm very people oriented, very feelings oriented. And so hence the dreams about music and being an artist, those pull me. And so I am fascinated and completely engrossed in the idea that knowledge really holds, or information and facts are something that are worth seeking, but only worth seeking for the sake of the person sitting in front of me. Because if that person, if these facts don't affect that person, if these facts cannot help the person sitting in front of me, then there's no point in entertaining them further than that.
That's,
you know what,
good.
I mean? Does that kind of make sense?
Yep.
So
definitely. Okay.
I would say that that's kind of where I'm going. Sorry to make it so serious.
No, that's all right. Okay, so I think that's about all the time we have for today. So real quick, same thing we do at the end of every podcast, which has only been one other podcast, so technically we're 100%. I'm just saying. I'm not saying we're awesome, but I'm saying we're about 100% in what we say we're going to do, unless you didn't do it, in which case I set the expectation really high. So obviously we talked about the one thing. What's the one thing you're going to do this week to further your dreams? So Mom, last week I think you said that you were gonna, what did you say last week? And then
last week I said I was gonna read through my dream book.
Uh-huh.
And I read through my dream book and I realized that there's a lot of room for some more dreams in here. So I added a few.
Did you find, what are some of the ones you added?
Oh, well, as you can tell by the hat I'm wearing, one of my dreams
backwards
is
hat.
To meet George W. Bush.
Oh.
And yeah, this is my Debbie the President hat.
I don't know,
Dad.
Because I think some of my dreams are just experiences that I want to have.
Oh,
and so
awesome.
I realized that that's something that is included in my book that made me really happy. And I was like, hey, I'm going to add some more experiences that I want to have. And then one of my other dreams that I noted was that I want to add some more skills that I haven't tried before. So I've recently started trying to sew. And I made two dresses this week.
Fine.
And I actually wore one of them in public. So.
How about that? Look at that. Congratulations, Mom.
Thanks.
dad, you said you, I believe, you think you said you were going to write down some dreams or something? I don't know. What did you say? How did it go?
I said I was going to embrace a blank piece of paper. Ugh. And so I have a new job opportunity. And so one of the things is an initiative that I have to do. And so I stared at a blank piece of paper until I came up with some really, really cool ideas. So it was fun. Awesome. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I'm excited about seeing it come to pass, and I enjoyed the exercise. So that's what I did.
That's a challenge. There's not a lot of challenges to a creative person than just staring at a blank piece of paper or staring at an open Word document with literally every possibility at your fingertips and just nothing comes to mind.
Yeah.
It's so terrifying. it's just the worst. It really is. But I definitely think that the more you do it, like the more you're just like, oh no, something is going to come.
Something eventually comes.
Yeah. So Caleb, we're doing this one thing. What's the one thing you're going to do this week to further your dream? So real quickly, what's one thing that you're going to do this week that's going to help your dream move forward?
To further my dreams. Ooh. Oh man, I wish I had more time to think. Oh, you can edit this in post.
No editing. No editing. I don't have time for editing. Are you serious?
Caleb, you're packing.
I am packing. So, in 2 weeks, I'm actually in the midst of a couple of dreams coming true, which is so cool. I'm on student government at my university, and then in 2 weeks, I'm going to be boarding a plane and going to Oxford in England to lead worship for 2 weeks. And so if that's not a dream, then I do not know. I don't know what is. And so this week I've
– do you have your passport?
I do. My passport.
We've had issues with passports before, so I just want to make sure.
Don't discuss that.
So I have set up a list of reminders to check off before I leave. That's something I'm gonna further my dream. But really, this next week I'm just gonna be pressing in prayer, being that it's not just songs, it's worship. So what does God really want to say in the 15 minutes I have every morning at 7:30 a.m.? What does God want to say through me? So yeah, lots of prayer, lots of really intentional. I've been listening to nothing but worship music for the last 2 months. It's been wonderful. So yeah, awesome. I'm gonna just keep doing that. Pack, make sure that I have guitar strings because last year they were almost broke.
Perfect. I think for me this week, I got the podcast on a couple platforms, which is cool. It's still on iTunes though, so I gotta figure that out. But it's on Spotify, it's on Anchor, it's on Google, it's on like 7 podcast platforms right now, I think, which is pretty cool. Like 10 people listened, which is sweet.
Hey, 10 more than last week.
Five of them were me, I think. I don't know. My big dream, I think my big dream right now is getting my advertising agency off the ground. So I think this week I'm going to spend some time doing a lot of back-end stuff. So I think my goal this week is to get my YouTube channel set up and created and get at least 2 videos posted on there, just some quick training videos and stuff like that. So start building my portfolio. So that's my, my big goal is to start an advertising agency. My small goal this week is to actually do it, I guess. I don't know.
Take a step or two.
I don't know. I figured it out. So cool. All right. Well, thank you guys for hanging out with me today, and we'll talk again next week.
Yeah.
All right. Love you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Love you too.
Bye.